that our church is facing really is a confusion on gender to begin with. this has been going on for probably 30 years, 40 years in our secular culture. The continued reintroduction of confusion about what does it mean to be a man, what does it mean to be a woman, and even some antagonism in terms of what femininity is supposed to look like, what masculinity is supposed to look like. I don't think any of us would be a stranger to just an observation that over the last even 20 years, the culture has been pushing really hard, not just on things like homosexuality, although that is a front and center issue. I spoke to some pastors Friday morning that CHAP assembled together, and one of our talking points and one of the points of conversation was the fact that the issue of homosexuality is going to be one of the defining moments in our churches over the next 20 to 30 years, and it is going to separate, and we are going to find out which pastors, which elders really are committed to the Word of God, regardless of what consequences might be, everything from losing tax-exempt status to worse, and whatever that might be, I don't know, and I don't want to sound alarmist, but it is going to be a defining issue, and so even that, in terms of the broader gender discussion, has been very popular to debate and discuss. But even in the sense of, our culture seems to be saying about manhood, it's a condition to be cured, it's a problem to be solved, masculinity, and their argument might go something like this. Here's the problem. Most of our prisons are filled with men. Most wars are started by men. Most crimes are committed by men. And so you start to look at that and you say, well, then manhood must be the problem. Masculinity must be the problem. And so the way to fix this is to make men a little more effeminate, to instead of rechanneling what God has made them to do and to be, it's, well, let's just redefine what a man is and let's make sure that men act a little more like women. Our culture, I believe, and I think I'm a pretty good student of our culture, is saying to our women, we're sorry God made you this way. And I wouldn't say it exactly in those words, but we're sorry that you're a woman because you're going to have a harder time leading in government. You're going to have a harder time being a CEO of a company, and you're going to have and then when the church gets involved and churches that believe the scriptures in terms of manhood and womanhood, well then you're going to have a hard time becoming a pastor somewhere and those kinds of things. And so basically I think our culture is pushing our young girls to act more like men. So we're slowly creeping in on what it would be called an androgynous culture of men and women, where that's two Greek words put together, man, woman, and it would be the kind of a more of a blend of a man and a woman, and moving more toward a center where the distinctions aren't nearly as clear. The big problem in this, of course, is that's not how God made it. That's not how God designed it to be. And even, you look in the book of Genesis, and you have these patterns evolving where men and women are designed to be very different. Equal, Genesis 1:26 and 1:27, equal in the image of God. Male and female, He created them. In the image of God, He made them male and female. So men and women are equal in the image of God, equal in their humanness before God. And yet you see even in the patterns of Genesis where you have Adam created first. This is important to Paul in 1 Corinthians 11, 1 Timothy 2, the order of creation. Paul's created first. Adam's created first, and then you have Eve created for Adam. And so God says, I'm going to make a helper fit for him. So in Genesis 1, they're both told to be subdue the earth, exercise dominion over the earth. And yet still there's this leadership element that Adam is going to have in terms of the order of creation, in terms of the fact that Eve is created to come alongside him, a helper perfectly suited for him, so that he will lead out in the subduing of the earth and exercising of dominion over the earth, but she'll come alongside him in that task as his equal, but as his helper. Adam is given the moral commands of the garden before Eve. So don't eat before Eve is created. So don't eat of the fruit of this tree. He is then responsible to communicate the moral commands of the garden to Eve. So he's now we see this pattern. Therefore, a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And so the establishment of these new of a new home, after God makes Adam from the dust, puts him to sleep, makes Eve, God says, I'm not doing it like this anymore. What I'm going to do from here on out is I'm going to create, a man is going to initiate. A man is going to leave his mother and father, go pursue a wife, go find a wife. He's going to initiate in this act because he's going to have to lead this thing. And so I keep telling people all the time, the reason why my girls are not calling boys is not because I'm just some blind traditionalist. That's just how my, you know, my family does it. It's because I think there's an order to this. And I think God has established a pattern, even when he says, a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, that he's going to initiate in this. And so, and I keep telling families with daughters, if my boys are attracted to your daughters, and we have what we think is a good dating courtship plan, but at some point, my son is going to be attracted to a woman, a young woman, and he's going to have to call her father and initiate. And if my son, if he's attracted to your daughter and does not have the gumption and the courage to initiate, then tell your daughter to run from my son. And I mean that. Don't get involved, because what's going to happen is that if he's not willing to initiate with all the hormones going and all the desires and all, I mean, this is as good as it's going to get for him. This is ambitious as he's ever going to be. Okay? And if he can't even in that moment muster up the gumption to call the father or whatever the pattern is and the plan is, then tell your daughters, he's not for her. Because if he doesn't have enough gumption to initiate, he is not going to lead this thing well. And if it depends on her initiation and she begins the thing, and then it may set up a pattern so that one day, what my wife calls, tell your daughters, don't marry a fixer-upper, okay? Don't marry the guy that wasn't ever going to church and he wasn't reading his Bible and he wasn't doing good in school, and your daughter comes along and all of a sudden he starts reading his Bible and he starts cleaned up and he's combing his hair and brushing his teeth and all of a sudden he's come alive. What's going to happen 6 months in is that she's going to realize she's married her son, and he's going to realize he married his mother, and this is going to be a disaster. Okay, so the leave and cleave element, I believe, is inherently in our sons. It's there. They want to leave, and they want to cleave, and they're supposed to want to leave. I like it when my son says, my daughter asked me the other day, she said, how long are you going to let the boys live at home? And I said, well, the girls can stay here as long as they need to. The boys are going to get out pretty quick because there's only room for one alpha dog in this house, and it's me. All right. So my son said, I'm ready to go. And that's good. I want him to be ready to go. I don't want him sitting there playing Xbox at 30 years old in my house, in my basement. I want him to go on. They're supposed to be gone. I want him to go do something for God. And so God wired it that way. So when a young man gets married and he marries a woman who mothers him, I don't want to get into a bunch of psycho mumbo jumbo, but I think God wired him to leave his mother and father. It's supposed to, when he feels mothered, I think it kicks back in this leave mechanism, okay? He's not supposed to want to be in this. He's not supposed to desire to be mothered the rest of his life. And at some point, being mothered is not a good thing. He doesn't want to be mothered. Now, moms, that doesn't mean you're out of the picture. It means that your relationship changes. And so what I want to show up here is something. We homeschool and have from the very beginning, and I'm not even sure we're doing it right. I'm not on a crusade about how to teach people how to do that part, but we're doing the best we can with what we've got. But we've been doing it for a long time, and I've been observing patterns and noticing things, and this is one of the things that I think could be helpful. Because in most homeschool families, the mom is doing a majority of the teaching. The dad has a job. He's out. I mean, my situation is I go to work every day, and I don't teach. You know, that's not part of what I do. So my boys are spending a lot of time with their mom. So here is how a young boy becomes a man. It's a complicated process. I shared with the men, you know, ladies, you've probably heard the jokes how simple men are, and just feed them and clothe them and pat them on the head and everything's going to be fine. But the actual process of becoming a man, from boy to man, is a complicated process. And so let's just say, so you've got a mom here, all right, and And then you've got the dad over here, so he's over here. And this isn't a statement necessarily of his proximity to the kids. But so let's say you've got a girl and you've got a boy. We did start out with boy-girl twins, and so this was a very healthy experiment for us to begin to observe what happens. Two kids born with the same mom, same DNA, the same upbringing, but they're very different, right? And we start to notice that early on, and this boy's making all sorts of crazy noises and doing all sorts of things, and she's pretty docile. And so bottom line is, for a girl to become a woman, okay, for a girl to become a woman, this the dad is involved. This isn't a statement about the dad's involvement. This is just a pattern, and you'll see what I mean when I go to the boys. But when a girl, for a girl to become a woman, she latches onto her mom, and she pretty much stays there. The dad is involved, but she stays there, and she identifies with her mother. She's already there. She's already identifying with her mother, and she just keeps identifying more and more and more. There's not a major shift that has to take place. For a boy to become a man, at some point in his life, and I think it starts much younger than we're comfortable with, especially moms, but at some point in his life, he has to say, I am not this, I am this. And what he's rejecting is not his mother. Okay, he's not rejecting his mother. He's just identifying, he's realizing, I'm a boy, I'm supposed to become a man. And in that process, as he does that, he has to say what he isn't. I am not her. I am not a woman. I'm not this. I am this. And there's a very complicated shift that takes place, because he then has to sort of leave this high-end place of nurture. He has to leave it a little bit to identify with his father, with a man in his life. And so, as you can see, this can get very complicated. What if he's not here? And there are multiple reasons. A dad could be present physically, but not emotionally. There are all sorts of things. That doesn't ruin everything. It just you can just see the challenge in it. This is where the men of the church should be rallying around young men who might not have a dad at home and sort of be a stand-in. We need to, the men in this church need to feel a huge burden about this, because of the necessity of having someone to identify with, the men of the church, but ideally it's the dad. So if he's not here, it complicates things. But here's an added complication. What if the mom's not ready for this? What if a mom isn't expecting this, or she's not expecting it at a young enough age? And so you know, before we had kids, I keep thinking, right, manhood, it's 15, 16, you know, you can vote at 18, you can join the military, you can, you know, whatever, that's the manhood part. I didn't think through this until years later, to realize that this really happens very gradually, slowly, but it starts at young ages you might not suspect. And so I can remember, I found Dana, I shared this with the men yesterday, I found Dana, and I can tell when my wife has been crying, okay? Most men can, if you know what you're doing. And I can tell when she's been crying. And so she's on the couch, and I can tell. And I said, hey, you know, how's it going? What you upset about? And she said, well, it's Gunner. Well, Gunner was 6 years old. I mean, you know, how bad could he make her cry? My word. I said, what did he do? She said, well, he didn't really do anything. She said, he didn't want to crawl up in my lap and watch cartoons this morning. So what's happening? Is he rejecting her? Is he mad at her? Now, it wasn't an act of defiance. I will not climb in your lap. This was not an act of disrespect. It was not an act of dishonor. But he's noticing that dad doesn't sit in her lap when they're watching television. Right? I mean, think about a six-year-old boy. Because what you need to know, this may be true for young women as well, but ladies, what you have to appreciate about boys that you may not know, just because you haven't ever been one, but is that every boy wants to be something when he grows up. And it's universal. He wants to be a man. He wants to be a man. It's universal. And he might not be able to articulate it at 6 or 7, but I'm telling you, at the heart of every boy is this inherent God-given desire to be a man. And so he's going to be observing his father, and he's going to want to be like his dad. It's a good thing. It's the way God wired it. It's the way God designed it, so that boys would identify with their dads or another man, but see that and say, I want to be a man. And so at 6 years old, Gunner, his sensibilities are changing, and he's realizing, Dad doesn't do this. I want to be a man. Dad is a man. And so he starts to do things that are more like what his dad would do or what his dad wouldn't do. holding hands. I go places with my mom when she visits, and we don't hold hands. Now, I don't think it'd be wrong if you did, but there's a certain, teenage boys don't hold their mom's hands, okay? I do want to tell you that. That's not in the Bible, but that just doesn't happen, all right? And it's okay. All right, it's okay. What's happening? Well, he's just starting to, God's working in his life. He's designed to be a man. And so I use the example. What happens? So we're not going to tolerate disrespect. Okay, this is what I told the men yesterday. We don't tolerate disrespect. Sometimes as a boy is becoming a man, he disrespects his mother and his father for that matter. But he'll, in the homeschool situation, there's a lot of concentrated time together, and a young man, he'll be disrespectful to his mother. So we don't tolerate that in our home, and our boys know it. We talked about that with the men yesterday. We're not tolerating disrespect. We can't let this transition turn into, I disrespect her and I only respect him. It's no, I honor her, I love her, I respect her, but I am trying to identify more with him because that's where I'm headed as a man, and to do that with honor and respect and love. And so what happens, we're on the Little League field, and a 10-year-old boy, he comes running around first base, and he comes into second, he slides into second, and he collides with the second baseman. They both go down. There's clay, dust everywhere going up, and the boys are making their way up. It's obvious nobody's unconscious, nobody's bleeding, but one boy's standing up, and he's kind of stumbling around, and his mom yells from the stands, "Are you okay, Johnny?" And he yells back, "I'm fine!" Well, what's he mad about? What's he mad about? He doesn't want to be over-mothered. He's starting to become a man, and he knows, look, when Dad does that, Mom laughs, right? You know, it's fun. He falls down, she laughs, and now she's yelling out in front of all my friends. It feels wrong to him, and it's okay that it feels wrong to him. Why? Because he's turning into a man, and this is what we want. I mean, this is what we want. So when he gets off the field, what's Dad supposed to say? He's supposed to go to that son and say, "I don't care what your mother does. You don't yell like that at her from anywhere, okay? That was totally disrespectful. I don't want to hear that again. You don't yell at her off the field, on the field. I don't care if she stood up and ran out there and brought you a Band-Aid. You don't yell, all right? You just, we'll deal with it. You come to me privately. You honor her. You don't disrespect her. So I want you moms to hear me here. This is not about disrespect. We are not going to tolerate this. The men, I tell my boys all the time, who's the most important person in this house? To me, it's your mother. That's the primary relationship in this house. I tell them all the time, she's way more important to me than you are. If somebody's going down in this house, it ain't going to be her, all right? I mean, I'm rescuing her first. You're on yourself, but I'm rescuing her first, all right? So they know she is most important to me in that house. And I speak to my boys in terms of, that's my wife. And I'm not letting the guy across the street talk to her that way. I'm not letting the guy at the bank talk to her that way. I'm not letting the guy at the grocery store talk to her that way. And believe me, I'm not letting some 10-year-old talk to her that way. No way. Or 11, 12, any. I don't care how old you are. You're not talking to her that way. But then I might sit down with my wife and say, "Hey, listen, we probably ought not to be. let's give him a little room. Let's give him a little room. Boys get hurt. You know, it was a hard thing. My wife grew up in a home with a sister. Her dad's a scuba diver and a water skier and a hunter, and so she had seen some of these things, but it was very hard for her to let the boys do some things that just might get hurt. They might get hurt. Very difficult. It's just natural, and it's God-given. That's why the Bible talks very little about generic parenting. It talks very much about mothering and fathering. There are two different things coming together here. Men are bringing all sorts of things to the table that really should be foreign to most women and are foreign to most women, and yet it's legitimate. There are legitimate things that a that a man is bringing to the table. And so we boys put stuff in their mouth and taste things that they're not supposed to, that a girl would never even dream about doing. They climb things, and that's not, if you're a young woman in here and you like to climb things and do things, go for it. That is not this isn't about girls can't climb trees and boys. The point is that I think our kids are being overprotected. I think we're going overboard, and what my concern is that a boy not be overmothered, in particular, a boy that he's not overmothered, that he be given an opportunity to climb a tree, to jump a ramp, to skin his knee, to fall down and get back up, to fall down, get back up, fall down, and get back up. A boy can recover from a broken bone. He really can. And I don't throw a party when my boys break their bones. I don't try to put them in situations and push them out of the tree so they'll break the bone. But I let them do things that they might get hurt. I don't say, don't do that, you might get hurt. I'll say, if you're going to do that, wear a helmet. Or if you're going to jump that high, wear something to protect your elbow, because I don't want baseball season to be ruined. All right. So it's still selfish of me. It's not because I don't want him to get hurt. It's just I don't want him sitting on the bench the whole year because he's injured and I'm still in the stands watching the game. So my encouragement is we want our boys to be leaders. We want our boys to be providers. This is fundamental. Most young men are going to be husbands and fathers, which means part of the skill set, part of their responsibilities are going to be, they're going to have to be leaders, providers, and protectors. And so it's not just machismo if your husband really does have a protective sense over you. It's not just machismo that he might be upset that another man might have paid attention to you in a way that he's uncomfortable with. It's not just, you know, beating his chest when he feels good about a particular accomplishment, or where, you know, he built something, or he, because what? Because God wired him to exercise dominion, subdue the earth, and to be a leader, provider, protector. And so the idea of making provision, protecting, establishing direction, these are all things, this is not just a sociological phenomenon. Now, it is marred by the fall. We are sinful creatures, every one of us in this room. And so can a man's inclination to lead, provide, or protect be a sinful inclination and have sinful manifestations? Absolutely. A man can go overboard in his leadership and be totally domineering and be a complete ogre about it. Well, that's a result of the fall. That doesn't mean he's not supposed to be a leader. It just means right now he's a bad one. But that God, we would pray that God would sanctify him, that he would respond to the leadership of this church and the preaching and teaching of the word in this church. And so this is inherent. God didn't make Adam neutral or Eve neutral in terms of how they're made up and how they're hardwired. They weren't neutral. They were different physically, but not merely physically. Why? Because they're going to be given different responsibilities, and those responsibilities are connected to how God made us. And so, you know, he made the lion to roar, right? And he made the lynx to run fast, and a bear to have certain ways to exercise the dominion a bear is supposed to have. And so God doesn't leave even the animal kingdom without the tools inherently built in them to do what they were made to do. And it's the same thing, even though it's marred by the fall, same thing for men and women. So that's why there is such a clash here. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. This is part of the curse. And what God is saying in his grace and goodness is that part of the curse is that we know ahead of time it's going to happen right here in this idea of these roles. God says it. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he's going to want to rule over. You're going to want to usurp the authority. He's going to want to. And this is going to be, this is the ground zero for most conflicts in the home when it's all said and done. I mean, we think it's poor communication, but it usually comes back around to something involving the roles. And so God in his mercy has said ahead of time and let us know, this is where the wheels are going to come off. So be prepared for this, how a man exercises his leadership and how a woman understands her role in this. That's going to be a source of conflict. And so we have been given, the men have been given a responsibility and do it imperfectly. But God has made us a certain way and has given us these inclinations to do these things. And so in our home, as we're trying to raise our boys, we want to even get down into this third level of what are the kinds of things that our boys are going to need to have cultivated in their life so they'll be good leaders, so they'll be good husbands and fathers. And what I encouraged the men to do yesterday, and I encourage all of us to do, is to be very proactive in this for our sons and our daughters to decide what it is they're going to, you know, wives and mothers, nurturers, homemakers, helpers, and then what are the things down here that we might need to cultivate in them in order for them to do well in those roles. And so that's kind of a little bit of an overview of some of the things that we talked about that I thought might be pertinent to both men, again, if you weren't there, or just to hear it again, but also to the women, just to hear a little bit about what was taught and the vision that was cast that might also involve you a little bit in terms of hearing some things. I've got several funny stories about things my boys have done that indicate their boyhood that I told yesterday. But does anybody have any questions? I've got more to say, but I thought, yeah, happy to. It's okay if you don't. Yeah, okay. Okay, sure. Yeah, and I'll be brief, just as brief as I can. We did talk a little bit about fathers and daughters, and you know, I've learned a lot about my wife by having four daughters and just seeing true patterns of things that tend to connect more with women than do men. So the boys and I, we can go shoot baskets and hardly say a word, and we really made a connection. Now, that doesn't mean we never talk, but we can go out and do nothing, shoot baskets or play catch, and I can come in the house and Dana will say, well, how'd it go out? You know, oh, it was great. We had a great time. Well, what'd y'all talk about? Well, we didn't really talk about anything. Well, how could it be great if you didn't talk about anything? Well, we just had a moment. Yeah, but how can you have a moment without words? Well, we did. We had a moment without words, all right? I'm just telling you. Just ask the boys. They feel good about what we just did, okay? We had a close moment, a connection, and we didn't talk about it, but we had it, all right? I'll tell the story that I told them. And my daughter, 5 years old, we went on our first date, and I was anxious, and, you know, I said, what do you want to do? She said, I want to go out to eat, and I want to go walk around the mall, hold hands in the mall, and eat ice cream. Okay, we can do that, because this is what my wife and I do. We go out to eat. If there's no good movie, there's nothing really good for Christians to do after that. And I'm not coming home fundamentally before the kids go to bed. So we walk around the mall and eat ice cream and hold hands and go to Walmart, the 24-hour Walmart. What are we going to do? Karaoke? I mean, there's really nothing to do. It's not lame. It's lame to go home early, but the rest of it, there's nothing for me to do. I don't have any options. So we do it, and I told the men yesterday, we're sitting at the restaurant, we're talking about candy and Barbie and dolls, and it wasn't quite the deep conversation I had hoped for, and we go to the mall, and I mean, she's only five, and we're holding hands, and we're eating ice cream, doing what we said we were going to do, and she's talking about candy and Barbie and dolls, and then she just blows me away, because she says, hey, Dad, guess what? What? When I grow up, I'm going to have a husband, and I'm going to love him forever. Where did that come from? We were talking about candy and dolls. And what I realized as a man, and you ladies you know, probably can explain this better than I can, but what I realized as a dad and as a man is this: here's this five-year-old girl who's never been to a wedding. She doesn't know anything about bridesmaids' dresses or event planning. She just has these warm feelings about me as her dad holding my hand. And she has fast-forwarded all the way to her wedding day. I mean, my word. I told the men, man, if a little boy is holding his mother's hand in the mall, the only thing he's thinking about, if you've raised him right at all, is how to get out of the mall, right? He is not thinking about getting married. He's about getting out of the mall. why am I even here? He's not thinking about his marriage. Boys just don't do that. And so my encouragement to the men was, is do not underestimate what is happening when you take your daughter out to get ice cream at McDonald's. Even if she never says that, my daughter has never said that to me since, but I know that was a gift. And I try to tell that story to every men's conference I ever speak at, because men just would never imagine that that's what's going on in her head. And we might tend to think, yeah, I'll take her out when she's 12, 13. We'll start that when she's 15 or something. But no, I'm telling you. So fast forward to 13. We're in the car. And we've had dozens of these opportunities now since she was 5. So we go from 5 years old, Daddy, one day I'm going to have a husband. I'm going to love him forever. So at 13, she's in the car and she says, Daddy, is it okay if I like a boy? Well, we've come a long way, right? Now, first of all, I would have never asked my mother that. I mean, I think this has cultivated a close relationship. You know, this dating idea, even though we were talking about candy and Barbie and some of the conversation seems so simplistic and we're not getting anywhere, and I wanted to talk about the hypostatic union and the providence of God and the whatever, you know, we're talking about candy. But all of a sudden, we've made this connection in a way that would never have happened if she and I just went out and tossed a basketball or through the frisbee or whatever we like to do, and we do some of those things. It doesn't happen that way. And so you fast forward all the way to time after time after time of cultivating just a closeness, and you can't make it happen. It's quantity time, not quality. You just say, well, I'm going to have, you can't plan quality time. I'm sorry. I've planned all sorts of things in my life that have been rained out and all sorts of things. It's quantity. You do this as often as you can, and you say, yeah, but we didn't do anything. We just went for ice cream. I know. Do it as often as you can, and the quality moments come out of the quantity. It just naturally happens. But if you're banking on 3 things every year, if 2 of those don't happen or 1 of those doesn't happen, then you're down to 2. You can't have some big things, but everything is about quantity. The quality happens as a result of the quantity. Same thing with some notes I used to write Georgia when she was little, and I use these examples of littler girls because I wanted the men, and you women can reinforce this at home with your husbands, that it means a lot. Even if, for instance, I wrote some notes, and my kids did a mother's morning out, and I'd write notes to the boys and to the girls, and or to Georgia, and you know, I love you, or I'm proud of you, you're a great girl, and same thing to the boys, and they'd all get their teacher to read them. But Georgia saved all of hers. See, there's a difference. The boys use theirs for spitballs. Georgia saved all hers. And I didn't know she was saving them until one day she had this little patent leather purse, and I said, hey, what's in there? And she opened it up, and there's all these notes just pouring out of there. And think about this, men. I mean, you know, I told the men this, but this is, ladies, you can help me reinforce this. I mean, she couldn't read. So it's not that she could read. You see, she's too young to read. So she saved them not because she's going back and reading, Dear Georgia. She doesn't know what notes say what. She just knows that all these pieces of paper have something nice on them that I said to her, even though, so she's looking at, this one might, she doesn't know if it says, Dear Georgia, I'm proud of you, or Dear Georgia, you're a great daughter, or Dear Georgia, I love you. She doesn't know that. It's, to her, it's just a bunch of confluence of letters together. But it makes a difference. And there may be some young men as well that respond more to writing and things like that. But just in general, the effort to build moments of closeness with your daughters has a gargantuan payoff. And you must, it's more helpful to not ignore the younger years and think that it's meaningless because they're talking about candy or Barbie or something like that. There's something going on there that isn't always taking place with boys. And a man will not naturally know that all this extra stuff is taking place in her life because he assumes, you know, she's just like, you know, like him, and he's just oblivious to it. So anyway, that might be helpful. And if you ladies could probably articulate that better and give even more insight into that to your husbands, especially those of you that have younger daughters, I think that would be fantastic, because my wife is always identifying things that I don't think about, that I'm trying to be a student of my wife and my daughters, but it doesn't always work that way, and so she's helping me. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, well, part of it is, part of it is the way men build relationships is very different from the way women build relationships. So women are more natural at building relationships, and men have to do something with other men in order to trust another guy. My wife finds it very easy to get together with other women that she doesn't know super well and still immediately have a sense of trust and be willing to talk about all sorts of personal things. And men, the problem with men's ministry in this country is we've modeled it after women's ministry. Women's ministry is very successful and has a lot of great things going on around this country. We've tried to model men's ministry. So after women's ministry, what I would say is men's ministry is more about men, ministry by men, not necessarily ministry to men. And so it's very easy to say, we're just going to put all these men in a room and we're going to say, here, do this Bible study and like each other and trust each other. And it just doesn't work that way. Men have to see another man in action. And so the old joke is, with all the business deals that are secured on the golf course, well, it's not because a bunch of guys drink a bunch of beer and then they make commitments to one another they don't even remember the next day. It's not what happens. A man gets on a golf course with another man or a group of men, and he can learn in a four-hour round of golf, does the guy cheat? Does he whine? He's blaming his clubs. He says his back hurts. He's throwing his clubs. Does he yell profanity when he messes up? You can find out a whole lot about a guy just in one round of golf. And that's when men make the deal or not make the deal. They say, I can trust this guy, or I don't like the way this guy operates. He's a cheater. I'm not making a deal with this guy. And so when men get together, what I would encourage is men doing things together, identifying problems. I guarantee you, I know your summers aren't as harsh as where I'm from originally in Florida, but there are going to be people that need things within a certain circumference of or diameter of this church, certain radius of this church. And so it may be school supplies. What if some men got together and said, we're going to make sure that every kid within a 2-mile radius of this church or whatever's appropriate, they're going to go to school with all the school supplies that they need this year. Let the men do it. Let them figure it out. I always use the example of in Florida, we have all sorts of air conditioning problems, and we have a lot of elderly single women who are living in homes, and the Florida heat comes and there's no air conditioner. I think the men of the church, you could get 5 men and say, look, that woman isn't going to have an air conditioner this summer. Go make sure she has an air conditioner. And they might say, well, how are we going to, I don't know. You guys got yourself up this morning, right? You got yourself dressed, right? You got a job, you probably are doing things, then get together and figure it out. Well, where are we going to get the money? I don't know. Pawn your watch. Don't buy that big screen TV you're getting ready to buy. I don't know. Figure it out. Dave Ramsey will kill you, but borrow the money. I don't know. Just figure it out. Get 10 more guys together. But at the end of the day or at the end of the week or whatever is reasonable time, make sure that she has ample air conditioning in that home so that she doesn't die this summer of some sort of heat stroke in that home. When men get together and solve a problem together and sacrifice together, that's when you have men who are building relationships. The next time they get together for a cup of coffee is very different. It's very different. Relationships between men are forged, not forced. They're forged, and it involves collision, and it involves saying things to each other that women would never say to each other, or would never say it in the way that men can say it to each other. Like iron sharpens iron. When iron hits iron, sparks fly. It's by design. That verse, that's not like some, God put it in there and he didn't realize sparks might be involved. No, that sparks fly. When men collide, they're supposed to collide, and they're supposed to be sparks. And that's what chips away at one man. As one man sharpens another, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Bam, bam, bam. And it's very different. And if we'll let our men do that and create opportunities for them to do that, our young men to do that, you have a more natural trust and a natural interaction between men. And you build up a natural trust because we've seen each other in operation, so that when you're taking your son to camping or doing something, I might not be able to go, and I send my son, and we're now doing kind of a Titus 2, older men helping the younger men, and then we're stepping into young men who don't have dads. And that's what creates this camaraderie, this band of brothers between men in a local church. It's not just coming and sitting in here. It's what do we do with what we've done, what we've learned in here, and how are we going to put that into practice? And I mean, let's empty an orphanage. Let's make sure people have heat and air and whatever other needs, and leaky roofs are repaired. And it's not social work, okay? It's men getting together and doing this in the name of Christ for someone who has a need. It's the cup of water in the name of Christ. And when men get together and do that, that's when men build relationships. Yes, ma'am. Well, it does, in the sense that a lot of dads, and I know we have teenage girls in here, but, you know, a lot of dads observe their daughters becoming women, and it's a challenge because, you know, she's a woman now, and my encouragement is for dads of teenage daughters who may be, you know, unsure of this new relationship is, number one, they need just as much or more affection as they were receiving before. For some teenage girls, going through these changes can be uncomfortable and produce some doubt and just some concern about their attractiveness to their, and their fathers need to be the men to come in and reaffirm what's going on. And so I have two daughters who are in those stages, and most of the details of any kind of issues, they're talking to their mother, but I still come along and say, hey, I know what you and Mom talked about today. I just want to tell you I love you. I think you're special. I think God made you this way, and I think it's good and right. And I just, you know, so just coming alongside, the verbal affirmation is really important. The appropriate, you know, physical affection is incredibly needed, particularly at that time, during those years. And so, but I think the dating still should take place, and the regular time alone spent together should take place, and possibly even more, because now, I mean, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and the conversations we're having are adult, you know, sophisticated conversations that are about life and deeper things of life. And so all the more reason now, I mean, we're way beyond, you know, I'm going to hold his hand and love him forever, you know, talk. We're now talking about what would be a husband for you, and what would his characteristics be like, and what are we looking for? And I emphasize we, because I keep telling my girls, why would you bring home somebody me and the boys don't like? I mean, it ruined every Thanksgiving from here on out. I mean, just bring somebody home that we like. I mean, it doesn't have to be just like me, but my word, just somebody that is not going to ruin every holiday when we get together. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I have. We're straight up noon, I think. But I'll tell one, and just to give you an idea of, and encourage the moms to let dads kind of cultivate some of these things. And one of the ones I told yesterday was when our kids were, three oldest were little and we didn't have our other kids, we'd go camping, we'd go hiking, and, you know, the boys were 8 years old and six, or, you know, seven and five, something like that, and they have a little pocket knife, and they'd be there with their pocket knife, and I'd say, okay, boys, now here's what's going to happen. We're going to hike this trail, and here's what's going to happen if we see a bear. Now, ladies, we're not going to see a bear. If I thought we were going to see a bear, I'm not walking the trail, okay? So we're not really going to see one. I am really, really sure, confident that, but it doesn't matter. It's perceived danger. And so here's what happens if we see a bear. I'm going in first. I have a knife. I'll go in first. If something bad happens to me, Gunner, you're next in line. And Gunner, you're 7 years old. You jump on the bear and you try to finish what I started. And, Fisher, do you got your knife? Yes, sir. You know, I mean, he's 5 years old, so he's got, you know, this little thing like this, and, you know, that knife ain't going to do anything. And so, but I tell him, Fisher, you're next in line. And I don't know what to tell you. Try to poke him in the eye with that little knife. I don't know, but. Now, girls, while Fisher's getting eaten, you run like crazy. So, now, what's happening? Are we really going to see a bear? No. Are those boys walking around with their testosterone level up to here? Absolutely. They are looking, they're ignorantly hoping we see one, right? I mean, they know this is their moment of demonstration of protection. But what are we instilling at young ages? The girls go free while the boys go down. It's women and children first. It's a very simple thing. The girls go to safety while we protect them the best we can. We go down while the girls get free. They're learning that at 7 years old, 5 years old. As simple as holding the door. You got to, if a boy's strong enough to hold open the door, then he should. I mean, some of those doors are pretty heavy, but my 7-year-old son, he races to the door, opens the door. I mean, he could barely hold it open. He's pushing it open so the girls can walk through. Why? Because we're just teaching them to honor women. Honor the girls in your life. Honor the women in your life. And for the boy, and we're teaching this idea. I mean, it's all there. Protection, leadership. So create these moments of adventure, even if they're not real. It's just perceived. We lost a sleeping bag one time down in the little ditch, and I called it a ravine so that the boys would think it was a really big adventure. And I don't know what we're going to find down there. There could be an anaconda down there. There's no anaconda. We're in North Carolina, all right? There's no anacondas in North Carolina. They don't need to know that. It doesn't matter. And when we get down there, we might find the bones of other men who have been down there trying to get there. So now again, they're amped up, right? They're amped up. They're going down and getting that sleeping bag. They're looking around just making sure that anaconda doesn't get them. And they go down into a ridge. We go down into the ridge and we get the sleeping bag. And they've talked about it for 2 or 3 years. Dad, remember that time we went down that ridge? Man, do I ever. Boy, I can't even believe we came back from that. And until they were old enough, Gunner finally got old enough to realize, he said, that wasn't a ridge, that was a ditch. I said, yeah, man. You've been bragging about it for 3 years. So it doesn't matter. It already had its way in him, right? He's now 11. And we had many other moments since then. And now it's in him. It's in him. I watched Fisher a year ago. We had this wagon. And the older kids aren't supposed to play on it, but it's too irresistible. They turn the handle backward and they go down this hill, right? You can steer it like this. And it ends up in a disaster every time, but they're boys, right? So this is what I'm telling you. It ends up in a disaster every time. And what do? They go cart it back up the hill again. Let them go. And you say, well, yeah, they're skinning their knee. I know. They're skinning their knee, their elbows. But I watched him. I was in the house on the second floor watching Fisher and just relishing in his boyhood, right? He's just going 100 miles an hour. Going to wham. And he goes, and I see him going down this hill, and he's going 100 miles an hour. And at the same time, there's this little 3-year-old girl on her tricycle coming by. And they're on a collision course. And I'm watching this, and this is a last-second decision. Fisher has to make a decision. Okay? Now, what decision is he going to make? Well, he's known since 4 years old. You go down. He started learning this when we were looking for a bear that isn't there. It's ingrained in him now, and he's 12 years old, and he's going 100 miles an hour, and there's a 3-year-old girl in a tricycle in front of him. There's only one option. And he turned that, I watched him turn that wagon, and he bailed so he wouldn't hit her. And I was surprised he was even conscious when the thing was over. This thing was a wipeout to beat all wipeouts. And he was rolling and he got up. And that little girl just, you know, she didn't even know. I mean, at least if you're going to do that, you want the damsel in distress to stand up and acknowledge your heroism. Right? She just kept going. She didn't even know that, you know, he saw his life flash before his eyes. Because she. But see, why did he do that? Why did he do that? Because he knew from 4 years old, this is a life. I'm telling you right now, if my boys are somewhere and your girls are in trouble, your girls are going to be okay. Your girls are going to be okay. Because my boys get involved, and they've been in fights, and they've gotten involved, and they've done things, and they step forward when there's a problem. They don't shrink back. They step forward with wisdom, caution. Last year, we live on a hill, a steep hill, and we live on a pond. And one of our favorite, we don't get a lot of snow in Louisville, but usually we get enough, the pond will freeze over, we'll get enough snow, and we can sled and go 100 miles an hour down that hill and just go 100 miles an hour across the pond. It just feels like you're going forever. Well, we got a big snow, but the pond was slushy. So it was a confluence of things, and I was still letting the kids, my wife and I were inside enjoying the quiet. All the kids are outside sledding. And Peyton, who at the time was 9 years old, okay swimmer, but she had all her snow gear on. She, you know, her hands are out to here and she can't move, and had all her snow gear on, and she goes into the pond. And she's drowning in the pond because she went too far and hydroplaned into the pond. And so Georgia comes running up to the thing telling us, Jeff, Peyton's in the pond. Well, by the time she got up to us, it was over. I mean, we're in there watching Wheel of Fortune or something, you know, just enjoying our kids in the pond. And Gunner dove in and grabbed her out of the pond. Now, that's not something we've rehearsed. I don't go throwing my kids in the pond and say, oh, somebody's in the pond, and, you know, what are we going to do? And somebody, you don't rehearse this, right? This is not a rehearsed moment. But this is a culmination of moment after moment that goes all the way back to fighting bears that aren't even there and instilling in one's heart. He knows there's not, so it was over. I walk out, and he's got her around his arm, and they're both drenched, and he's walking her up to the thing, and everybody's wide-eyed. Fisher, who's also a man of action, has been reading this book, Worst Case Scenarios book. Are you familiar with this? So Fisher knows. I mean, we're driving across the bridge. Dad, you know what you'd have to do if you drove off this bridge and your windows won't go down? Well, no, son, I'm counting on you to know. I mean, you know what happened if you got attacked by a shark and he had an axe in his, you know, I mean, he's got all this, I mean, just if a dinosaur came back to life and he was, you know. And so Fisher has got this worst case scenarios thing memorized, and he knows about hypothermia. So he's in there, put some lukewarm water in the tub. She's got hypothermia. You know, so he's a man of action trying to get involved in this whole thing. And so I asked Gunner. I said, Gunner, was your heart beating fast? He said, yes, sir. I said, tell me what happened. He said, Dad, I saw her go out into that pond. He said, I was standing right there, and I saw her go out into that pond. And I saw her thrashing around in that pond. And he said, I started to take my jacket off, and I said, forget that. She's going to drown while I'm taking my jacket off. He said, I just dove in and got her. All right, you don't rehearse that, but you do train that. You train that in all sorts of moments, little moments, as they're growing up. And so I would encourage you, I'm running past my time here, but just encourage you that, you know, my wife on many occasions has asked me about me letting the boys do stuff, and I've told some funny stories yesterday, and she'll every now and then say, is that normal? And I'll say, yeah, it's just what we do. You know, I did stuff like this. It's just, I turned out all right. You know, I mean, it's just, we outgrow it. But part of it is what happens at those younger ages is what impacts us in these older ages. And so let them do it, and let them do some stuff. And ladies, let your husbands, go ahead and let the boys make the break. Grieve about it. Look, I get it. I understand. It is heartbreaking. I know. It's heartbreaking to watch my daughter look like she's 21. And so, I, you know, dads are not totally oblivious to watching the kids grow up. And so, but let it happen as early as it seems to want to happen. And don't tolerate the disrespect. But anyway. All right. I don't know what else to say. Thank you.